20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packers fans? Happy Tuesday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. You know my guest, the one and only, the freaking amazing Justice Mosqueda. Find him on social media at JUMOSQ, acmepackingcompany.com. Justice, my friend, how the heck are you doing?
Doing good. Thought I was going to be at the Super Bowl this week. Then my cat decided to keep kicking, even though he's dealing with this little math cancer thing. So didn't follow Addy to the Bay to visit family. Didn't go, but got my credentials. It is so much easier for me to get credentialed for literally the Super Bowl than a
Green Bay
Packers training camp press conference.
Yep.
Which I've been denied for, by the way.
Correct.
I've been denied for that. Yeah.
Yeah. The Packers are Fort Knox per usual for everything. And yeah, it's easy to get to the Senior Bowl. It's easy to get to the combine. It's easy to get to the Super Bowl. It's easy to get to any of that stuff. Just not 1265.
Yeah, they didn't make announcements though. Hey, I'm actually kind of surprised that they did, because
I'm proud of them.
They've held off. Like we've mentioned this before, but like there was one time I was down at the combine. Like we didn't know what the coaching staff was going to look like.
April 4th last year. April 3rd, April 4th, April 6th, something in there that they finally announced the coaching staff.
So they announced the triumvirate, right? But they also announced Gannon. They finally did it. They did it.
I know. I'm talking just
a little bit to the fans. Good job.
First of all, I think this is the first time they've ever done sort of any confirming of GM coach
extensions.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm proud of them for that. That's a good first step. I did see some of like the Friday news dump thing. I don't think Green Bay felt like they needed to do a Friday news dump.
I don't think they care enough.
No, for sure. I don't think so either. So I don't think it was a Friday news dump. I just think that was when they got it finalized and they got it out on Friday or whatever. And then, on Monday today, as we're recording this, they announced the defensive coordinator, Jonathan Gannon. So yeah, how exciting.
Yeah. Now we just got to figure out what the heck the staff looks like. I mean, I do think like the composition of the staff will kind of tell us sort of what they want to do. By the way, that Goot presser, Andy, I don't know how you got to get it out of Goot.
What do you want me to do?
Because I know Goot, someone's going to ask him 3-4 or 4-3, and he's going to be like, well, you know, most of the time you're in sub packages in the NFL and, you know, we'll do whatever. Like I need to know, because small rant, it's coming. It started already. We're two minutes and a couple seconds into this, but the composition of your roster, if you're going to be a 3-4 team versus if you're going to be a 4-3 team, will 100% change what is available for you on special teams. I'm less worried about it on the defensive side. If you move into a 3-4 defense and your idea is, hey, we need literally 1,000 pounds on this defensive interior when you're in base looks, which I understand for the most part, you're going to be in sub packages, all those things. Guess what? You still match base to multiple tight end, multiple back sets,
which we're seeing a lot more of.
Which not only is an uptick in this league right now, the Bears, the Lions, the Vikings, all of them want to live in that world.
Yes.
So that's what 6/17 of your schedule that you're going to have every single year, right? So if you want to live in that world, fine. What that also means, though, it's going to be really hard to keep that fifth linebacker on the team, Nick Neiman, who's, you know, the only true specialist that we've talked about who has stayed on the roster for 17 weeks. It's going to be really hard for you to keep that sixth edge, Aaron Mosby, who I think he was only on the 53 officially. He'd been called up 3 times before then, but only on the 53 from week 10 on. It might be harder to keep that fifth safety, things like that, right? So I would like to know going into this offseason if they're going to run a damn 3-4 defense or if they're going to run a 4-3. I think they're going to run a 3-4.
I would assume that Gannon gets a presser sometime this week too, if not this week or by next week at the latest. They did Halfley as soon as they hired him officially.
Fair.
So I would assume that Gannon's going to get one this week or next week at the latest. So even if we don't quite get it out of Goody, and I'll try my best, even if it gets answered or asked a different way, I'll try to follow up on it.
Some of this is selfish, by the way, because like I have started draft work now, and I've been hitting cornerbacks very hard because I think we are going to take cornerbacks in this draft.
Yep.
I don't know whether their plan is to start them in 26. Like, they're going to need the contracts in 27 at the minimum, and that's why I decided to start with corners.
When there's a need for a position group, not only now, but also even more so in the future, in the 20, you are in Goody's sweet spot deluxe, because they already like to take players a year in advance for exact scenarios. Like, that's our, and now it's also a problem and a need now. Oh, you are in the Goot zone 101. Like, that is, we can hone right in on that.
Yes. So that I've been really looking into cornerbacks, right? Trying to figure out like their backgrounds, making calls, all that stuff. But now I need to know, like, okay, after corner, like, center, are we going to need a center? Are we going to bring back Sean Ryan? Nose tackle, what kind of a nose tackle are we looking for, depending on, you know, if we're going to be a 3-4 or 4-3? Linebacker, like, that'll be a big thing, too. What type of linebacker are we really looking for? So, yeah, I would not to put a question in your mouth for you to repeat at the Google question, but I would really like to know if we're running a 3-4 or 4-3 before I start spending all this time and energy making phone calls and watching film about some of these draft prospects.
Hey, Goody, I know that Jason Wilde asked you a question already about 3-4, 4-3. And I know you said you're going to mostly play, you know, in nickel defenses anyway. But Justice Mosqueda, Acme Packing Company, really, really wants me to press you.
He was at the Senior Bowl, right? So, like, it's not like he's not thinking about draft prospects.
Oh, for sure.
And stuff. Yeah, like, Goot travels more than most GMs, by the way. Like,
he knows. He knows already. He knows whether
he knows.
He knows. Yes.
I want to know, because I have to waste my time watching film and stuff like this, and it takes a lot of time to watch these prospects.
There's nothing worse than when all of a sudden you have to spend time watching a player who, you know, that you find out now they're not going to take him for sure. And it's just like, well, there's a lot of time that
center. I'm like, do I really want to do a deep dive into the centers if we're going to bring back Ryan? Cause we might just have Ryan and then have Monk be his backup. Like, I don't know.
Are you okay? We'll get to that. Maybe. Yeah. Are you a full conclusion that Elton's for sure gone? I am.
Yeah.
But I think so.
No doubt in my mind.
I'm in the same spot. I just want to make sure.
I think people got way too hung up on, like, guys. Like, I kind of get it a little bit. I think they're projecting it wrongly on Elton, where people talk about, like, guys playing the wrong positions and stuff like that. Elton's been on a decline for 2 years, folks. I don't know if the move to center really has anything to do with his decline in play. It's why he didn't get the extension coming into this year. The Packers are so weird with how they schedule contracts. Like, it was always obvious that coming into this season, Elgton Jenkins and Kenny Clark, they were in their final seasons of their Packers career. That was it. But, like, I get it for the Morgan and Anthony Belton thing, because I've been screaming since either one of them have been drafted. Morgan is tackle only. Belton is going to have to be a guard at the next level. And they had them do the opposite things for all of training camp and the start of the beginning of the regular season. I do think that was a mistake that everyone on the staff made.
It was a mistake, unequivocally.
Yeah, but the Elton thing, I don't think, like, Elton playing out of – like, I don't buy that at all.
I had that conversation with Mike Wald during the season, because he kind of made this – maybe there was a mistake of moving him to center, or that, you know, if he was back at guard, it would have been better. And I'll be the first. And I told him this flat out. I'm like, Mike, I am the last thing I'm ever going to do is get into an argument with you about offensive line play. That's not a good scene for me.
You're not winning many of those.
But I did say, I'm like, just watching him, he looked disinterested at times. And again, maybe he just didn't want to play center, but he did not look good as just, like, not center guard, just pure blocking. Block the guy in front of you, whether it's in run blocking, pass protection, I don't care. Like, once you actually are in your position and can block, regardless of where you're at, he just did a very poor job of that. And then he was like, yeah, I think maybe you're kind of right or whatever. But
and the decline started in 24. It wasn't just this past year.
I totally agree.
He's been falling off for 2 years. Like,
part of the reason I like the move to center is I thought, It might be something that like reinvigorates him, lights a fire, give me something different, more autonomy, like at the line of scrimmage, like maybe it like juices him up. It did not. I'm there with you too. You mentioned earlier the defensive end linebacker, how many they can keep, or you know, things like that. Colin Oliver might be somebody that is able to go in between, yeah, depending on how they want to use him. That could kind of save a couple spots. If he can show that he can play on teams and maybe be kind of a hybrid linebacker, designated pass rusher type, maybe you save a roster spot that way.
The healthy scratched them.
I know.
The last game that they just played.
But they had a few extra. They had Aaron Mosby. They had.
I just have to see it, right? Like, yes. Okay, yes. But then the thing that we've been talking about special teams for like really like the last 2 years, right? Where I'm like, they care about like these two units, and then field goal protection they cared after the blocked kick against the Cowboys in week 4. So if you want to count that, they care about 2.5 of the 6 units on special teams. It's going to be harder to support those other two units, the units that they care about, punt and kickoff coverage, if they're more limited at linebackers, edge rushers, stuff like that, which could happen if you're allocating more bodies to the 300 pounders. And I know this is where everyone gets the bright idea and they're like, oh yeah, we just move LVN into a run first defensive tackle role at 270 pounds. And I'm like, this is not how it works. Gannon played Jordan Birch, who is 280 pounds on the edge, and had him dropping into coverage.
I like Jordan Birch coming out.
I like Scuddocks. Yeah. But yeah, LVN very much would be an outside linebacker in a 3-4 under Gannon. So
dropping into coverage. Let's do it.
He's going to have to. Well, people don't want to have these conversations. Like, so yeah, let's do it. Gannon dropped into coverage 5 times more with edge rushers than Halfley did this season. 2.5 times the rate of Halfley in 2024 when they were doing more of the disguise stuff, the sim pressures. If you guys ever hear sim pressures, all that means is they're still only rushing 4. They have the 7 guys in coverage, but the guys in coverage and the guys who are blitzing are coming from different positions, right? So, like, here's a really bad example of it. The Bears game, right, where they line up Trips Bunch onto the sideline, and we only have 2 guys over it because LVN's supposed to drop off from a 3-point stance, right? That's a sim pressure. So that is going to happen way more often under Gannon. Hopefully not Trips Bunch, you have 2 over 3 guys, right? Hopefully we could get a check out of that. That's how those defenses kind of live, is to get checks. When you know you're in bad situations, but like that's going to happen more often. And guess what? The guy who drops is usually the better athlete. That's usually how it ends up working out. So like that, guys, it might not be LVN. It might be Micah. But yeah, again, fans don't want to hear it, but I don't want them to be surprised either when we kick off week 1 and they're like, what the heck?
That's why Colin Oliver's got to be opposite Micah Parsons, so he's the better athlete. Well, the better, I don't know.
I mean, that would help. I mean, if you're on 3rd down and stuff like that, I mean, that definitely would help. I mean, those are the situations where you could kick LVN into D-tackle too, but I just don't think that it's going to be, especially when they're playing 3-4. When you're playing 3-4, it's usually going to be early downs against multiple tight ends. Like, that's not a good matchup. You don't want to do that.
No, you do not. I thought I had somewhere else I wanted to go with that, but yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see just again, what if they are staying in a 4-3, if they do go to a 3-4, and then how they kind of fix it to Gannon's system after that. And it could have some major implications for how they build this roster the rest of the offseason.
Yeah. And it's tough when you're switching DC so many times, because you're trying to allocate talent. Like, Darnell Savage was very much brought in to be a Mike Pettine safety.
Yeah.
And then he played under Joe Barry. Right. So like the way the Packers do it, like we bring in a guy, we sign him to a 4-year contract. We want to have him for a 4-year contract, whether it's in free agency, an extension, or the draft. So like this boat turns very slowly.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, with the bing, 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 with all the different defensive coordinators, like this boat is being asked to turn a lot. Right. Where we talk about things like, you just gave Isaiah McDuffie a contract. Now it's a short-term contract. It's only a 2-year contract. But, like, would you have made that if you knew your defensive coordinator in 2025 was going to be Gannon? Probably not. Probably not.
No, probably not. Did you see the tweet? I think it was Ari Marov or whatever his name is, put out about how many new offensive coordinators there's going to be this offseason.
Stanovich was the longest tenured offensive coordinator last year.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So he will be again. So back-to-back years, longest tenured offensive coordinator, Adam Stanovich. Again, we've talked about this with the NFL's. The NFL is pulling triggers much quicker for coaches across the board. And I don't think the Packers really want to be in that game where they're paying buyouts. So
teams that will have a new offensive coordinator this year: Titans, Chargers, Chiefs, Lions, Dolphins, Commanders, Falcons, Bucks, Bills, Ravens, Eagles, Browns, Steelers, Giants, Jets, Cardinals, Raiders, Broncos, Bears, Rams, Seahawks. 21 out of 32. And if Steno were to get the Seahawks job somehow, that would potentially be 22 out of 32.
Yeah, and the Seahawks would be in a position where they're, what, that's four offensive coordinators in 4 years? Three offensive coordinators in 3 years? Something like that?
Yeah, it's in that category, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, stuff moves quick, man. And there's not a lot of new, like, Robert Saleh goes back, gets fired, goes back to being Shanahan's DC, gets hired to be a head coach, hires Gus Bradley to be his defensive coordinator. There's not enough names to build all the hype that these owners want for pulling that trigger. Like, you're not going to get the same level of optimism if every team is turning over 10 coaches a year or 10 head coaches a year. 10 coaches.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
It's crazy.
It's nuts.
Speaking of coaching changes, how are we feeling about, well, let's start with this. It's February 2nd as we're recording this, February 3rd as people are listening to this. I would be willing to bet/guess that if Green Bay were going to go in a different direction at offensive line coach or at special teams coordinator, we would have heard it by now for two reasons. A, you want to get involved in those conversations to find your new guy. And B, you don't want to screw over the outgoing guy either and be like, ha ha, now all the jobs are taken. Now yeah. We're firing you. You don't want to do that either. So I cannot imagine at this point in time, as much as we maybe don't like it or whatever, that they're going to change from Luke Butkus or from Rich Bisaccia at this point.
Yeah. And I don't think Bisaccia was ever on the table. Butkus, I just didn't know. But I definitely do something different with the offensive line coaching this year. I like that you point those two out and not Stanovich, because I do think Stanovich, like, until all these OC jobs are filled up, I don't know what's going to happen. And the fact that Getsy is still kind of hanging around, like, Hackett, I think he was just like, I got to go get a job, man. My buyout is done from both spots, because I think he was still getting paid on the Broncos buyout, which is why he took the analyst job. But Getsy is still hanging around, which, you know, potentially could be OC, potentially could be quarterback coach, right? He's filled the quarterback coach role before. He would have gotten the OC job over Stanovich if the Bears didn't give him the play calling opportunity that offseason. I don't think they're making changes on the offense.
If Steno goes to Seattle as their offensive coordinator, especially at this point in time, I'd be pretty willing to bet that either Luke Getsy or Jason Vrabel probably take that offensive coordinator job. You're just getting worse. You're taking away Steno. You're not replacing him with anybody. And now your senior assistant is just going into the offensive coordinator job. You already have him on staff to do whatever you want him to do anyway. There's no advantage to this. And yeah, I the Steno thing has never made sense to me. I'm not putting Steno up on this pedestal of like, oh my God, the Packers have Adam Stanovich. Like, this is amazing. I can't believe they've got this unbelievable offensive coordinator. But the Packers have 99 problems, and Adam Stanovich right now for me is not one of them.
I think the big thing, the big feather in Steno's cap right now, right, is the spinner series.
Yes.
Because that's what Matt has said. Like, no, yes. Steno came in and installed that Correct. For us. And not a lot of NFL teams do it. That if you guys don't know what the spinner series is, right? It's all the stuff where you start seeing like Malik Willis do like the pirouette in the backfield, and you have no idea who the heck has the ball and all that stuff. It's like a big youth football thing, and they decided to bring it in to the NFL. And to his credit, like, Malik can run it, and it worked pretty well. We beat a couple teams doing it. Like, it was nuts that we got away with it game one when we played the Indianapolis Colts in 2024 with it, and it worked. So I think that's the big feather in his cap right now. But, like, they do good things on offense. Their offensive line just cannot execute. And Matt wants to hand the ball off and get, like, average 4.5 yards on inside carries. That's really what this team wants to be. Again, we talk about this boat that turns very slowly. Like, Morgan's under contract for multiple years.
Correct.
Melton just got drafted. Correct. Tom just got an extension.
Correct.
Banks just got his free agency. So, like, people are like, we have to drastically improve the offensive line. Folks, 4 of the 5 jobs are locked in for multiple years. So, Banks maybe not. Banks, maybe he gets cut in 27 or something like that. But you just have to have these guys perform better. And correct. To me, I was like, then we have to
offensive
line coach.
Correct.
I guess they're just going to run it back. I don't know. I thought it was really interesting with the defensive staff because we haven't heard that any of these guys have gotten fired, right? Which to me sure seem – I haven't done – again, I've been doing draft work, not really worried about the coaching staff stuff. But to me, that sure seems like a move of like, hey – we're not going to pay your guys a buyout, but if you guys want to leave, you guys are free to leave for whatever. And everyone other than Duggan has left for a lateral job. Who has left for a lateral job. Duggan became the DC in Miami under Halfley. He was the co-DC his last year at Boston College. Ansley didn't even follow Halfley to Miami. He's in Dallas now and still has the passing game coordinator title, which he's going to get paid more than a defensive backs coach. Thought that that's kind of a weird move for the team to make when Domofsky reported that LaFleur interviewed each and every single one of his defensive assistants for the DC job. I know people are like, well, there's guys that Matt interviewed that it didn't come out in reporting and stuff like that. The Halfley thing is really a one-off because if you're Halfley's camp, you couldn't have interviewed with the Packers, returned to BC as the sitting head coach of a college football team in the ACC, and then still gone out and recruited in the same ways that you would have been able to before that news came out, right? So, like, that one had to be everyone shuts their mouth until this thing is done, right?
Yep.
In all of the other circumstances where you're looking at NFL guys, like, the agents want that out there. So I don't know how many more guys interviewed for this gig that we aren't aware about. And if it's just the numbers that we know about, it's 4 outside guys, right? Christian Parker, Gannon. I'm trying to think of the other guys. Al Harris.
And the Minnesota.
Durante Jones. So it's those four. And then the internal guys that LaFleur interviewed. Pretty weird to go to your staff, interview them for the DC job. And then this is an assumption. This is not a no. But then to basically treat it as like, yeah, we're not going to buy you out, but if you want to leave, you guys can leave. Like, that's such a weird process.
It's an interesting outcome. The Ansley one is very weird to me. I do wonder.
He has a background in this scheme.
Yes.
He coached it at Alabama. He was the DC at Tennessee under Pruitt. And then he worked under Brandon Staley with the Chargers when they really, you know, Fangio, you know, he was coaching under Fangio. But then Staley really brought it to the NFL when he was with the Rams too. So, yeah, weird that they – I thought Ansley would have had the best chance to stick on a quarters-based defensive staff than anyone.
Well, and Downard's been here through, what, multiple coaching staffs.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, he's been able to adapt to anything. I do wonder if, like – for Downard, I wonder if he just hit like, all right, I'm not going to be able to get anything above. Like, last year, you hired a passing game coordinator ahead of me. I've reached my ceiling in Green Bay. I have to go somewhere else, even if I have to take a lateral job now. I wonder if it's something like that. Ansley's the one that really is weird to me, unless his was like, hey, if you're not going to make me defensive coordinator after I interviewed, I want to go elsewhere. So I don't know. Those things are weird, but definitely odd that those both went down. But I'm excited about Babich. You know, I'm interested in the new linebackers coach, obviously having the Virginia Tech defensive coordinator background. I am bummed about losing Sean Mannion, but to me so far, the entire coaching process going from what they had to what they have now, at least so far, to me, it's kind of come out in the wash where there's some things that I like better. There's some things that I'm like, all right, we'll see. But I don't feel like it's immeasurably better or immeasurably worse. It just, it feels like it's all kind of in the same realm.
Yeah. It's just, it's weird to me that they didn't get into the bio world at all. Right. Which is like, again, the buyouts are now like an implied cost of the coaching pool.
Yeah.
With the way that teams are like all the Raiders are paying 4 head coaches, 3 GMs. They gave Chip Kelly a $6 million per year deal and fired him in like November or whatever. Like they're all assuming this cost. And then Green Bay is like, if you want to leave, you can leave. So far we don't have confirmation that DeMarcus Covington is coming back. All we know is he hasn't left for somewhere else at least yet. I will say if Gannon does have a completely new staff, reported losing. Oh, okay. Never mind. I just got a damn football scoop notification that said Coach Prime reportedly losing to the NFL, and it was one of his assistants. I don't care about that. I thought Dion was going to the NFL. I was like, I need to restart this.
Raiders, new Raiders coach. Clint Kubiak turned it down.
But so if Gannon does have a completely new coaching staff, it'll be the first time a DC gets to start off with a brand new fresh staff, top down, no holdovers, since before Capers, because that's when I looked at last. So Capers didn't have that. He had some holdovers. Patton, Joe Barry, Halfley, all of them. So if Gannon really does get to build his own staff, I at least think that's interesting. Now, the process of like, yeah, we're only going to do that if guys decide to leave is pretty silly, and you're not going to be taken up on that every single time, because I don't think every time you're going to change DC, he's going to be hired as a head coach somewhere else.
Right.
I don't think you can bank on that process. You're going to have to get into the buyout world at some point, but they don't have the appetite for it. They don't have the appetite for it, Andy.
We'll be right back. Well, we made it. The big game is almost here. And there's no better way to cash in during America's biggest sporting event than Prize Picks, where it always feels good to be right. This week, Prize Picks has a special max discount for the big game, live in the app right now. Drake May just needs one passing yard for the max discount to win. Just add another player to your lineup, and if your picks hit, you can cash in. Now, Prize Picks is super simple to play. Just pick more or less on 2 to 6 player stat projections, and if you get your picks right, you could cash in. And with the new social feeds feature, you can share Prize Picks with your friends and copy lineups from winners with a single click. You can copy lineups that you like or use them as inspiration for your own picks. You can even follow Prize Picks partners like us and tail or fade our picks with just one click. One of my favorite aspects about Prize Picks is making multiple sports picks in the same lineup. With football coming to an end, I love combining basketball and hockey in the same lineup. And guess what? Baseball is going to be here before you know it as well. So download the Prize Picks app today and use code Packaday to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code Packaday to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. Prize Picks. It's good to be right.
Apparently not. I mean, it worked out, I guess, for the most part, this point where, again, you did have a bunch of people leave elsewhere, and so you didn't even have to do it. But yeah, I am going to be interested. Covington just makes sense to stay if you can keep him. I don't know why you'd want to go in a different direction there. But again, if Gannon wants it like his own guys, then yeah, maybe you do it. We'll see.
It'll be interesting to see what happens with Covington too, because again, I think staff composition matters. Like, we have 2 DB coaches now. We have an off-ball linebackers coach. I think we're fine there. I think we're just one or two away, I guess, depending on if you think Covington is coming back. If we're going to be a 3-4 team, they're probably going to split the edge defenders and the interior defensive linemen up. Covington has done both at different periods of his coaching career. Covington was actually a college receiver, right, who ended up having to coach defensive linemen. So he's kind of done both. So I don't know if we're in the market for a defensive line coach or a 3-4 outside linebackers coach right now. I don't know which one it is. Or if there's,
if they say 4-3, then maybe neither.
Yeah, yeah, if they're exactly. if they're 4-3 again, Gannon, when he was in Philadelphia, he just had one assistant at every level of the defense. There was just a defensive line coach, a linebackers coach, and a secondary coach. Now we have 2 secondary coaches, which is closer to what he did in Arizona. But yeah, that's just kind of how it breaks down.
Are you concerned about losing Sean Mannion at all?
I don't know I don't know. I don't know what I don't know. I mean, I've talked to, so this is the hands up, right? Putting my cards on the table, all that stuff. Worked for Eric Galco when we were together at the XFL. He is now running the Shrine Bowl. He obviously had Sean Mannion in there to be the offensive coordinator of the West team this past year. He thinks he's really impressive, all that stuff. The other guy for the OC for the East team is the, what was it, passing game coordinator from the Cardinals. He says really good things about him too. I know we had him in for a interview for a quarterback's coach and all that stuff. Galco thinks that would be a really good move. The side note, like the league office kind of controls what the coaching staff is for these All-Star games a little bit. Okay. But the actual event can request specific guys for specific roles. So like the cart, I didn't ask him about Gannon because Gannon was out the door already, but the Cardinals guy, they specifically put in for him to be an offensive coordinator. And Galco said that he did a really good job and all that stuff. So like maybe he would be even better than Sean Mannion. Who knows? I don't know. I know the guy who developed Jordan was the same guy who developed Aaron. And for the most part, Mannion kept Jordan going, which like you could view as a positive thing. But then also at the same time, like when you're the way that the staff is set up, right? It's Matt is the offensive play caller. He's the guy who stirs the drink here. Adam Stenovich is the offensive coordinator. Vrabel is the passing game coordinator. And then there's Mannion. So like, is he first in line to talk to Jordan? Is he fourth in line in terms of like the chain of command in terms of we're giving Jordan this guy credit for Jordan? I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, it's the same thing with the Bills thing. Like somehow 50 people are getting credit for developing Josh Allen, right?
That's how it works. When you have something that works, everyone's going to claim their credit for it. It seemed like Mannion did a good job. I think it's funny how with Steno, we don't really know what he does. So Steno bad, fire Steno, get rid of Steno. We don't really know, you know, at the quarterback coach level, exactly how involved or what you know, what Sean Mannion really brought to the table, but Mannion unknown, Mannion good. We love Sean Mannion. We don't want him to go anywhere. So we really don't know either side.
I don't think anyone knew anything about Mannion until, I shouldn't say that. Cause I know that there's members of the beat who are like, yes, we've been told like Mannion is like beloved in the building, all this stuff.
For sure.
The Packers fans, I don't think there's any Packers fans who've spent an ounce of thought on Mannion until he was announced as the offensive coordinator for the West team at the Shrine Bowl. And people were like, he's got some buzz around him. And then he also took a job that no one else wanted. Like Philadelphia is a mess. Their offensive coordinator search was a mess. I just genuinely do not have strong feelings one way or another.
Same. I'm in the exact same boat. 1,000,000% on both Steno and Sean Mannion. I just do think it's funny how like one we love, the other one fire, but we really don't have a great.
I think it's just hard when you have a chain of command like that. I don't know in terms of like the way you're dividing credit. Like I can look at the offensive line and say this offensive line is inconsistent. If not poorly coached, inconsistent, right?
Correct.
We can look at the linebackers and say the linebackers clearly regressed under Duggan than what they were under the second half of the season under Campanelli.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know what you can make of Jordan when he's got a play calling head coach, an offensive coordinator, a passing game coordinator, and Mannion. I don't know if he's going to fall off a cliff because Mannion isn't here anymore.
Yeah. There's
I
no way.
Do not know that.
There's no way. He'll be totally fine one way or the other. You mentioned earlier, as we kind of transition to a different topic, you mentioned Aaron Banks. I want to talk about Nate Hobbs as well. We talked about Elton being gone. We're in agreement there. I do agree with you. I think Aaron Banks is going to be back. I disagree with that decision. I think they should move on, but I think they will absolutely keep him. At least I think I'm like 90% sure they'll keep him. I'll put it that way. And I don't even know what question I want to ask you in regards to this, but both of the scenarios with Aaron Banks and Nate Hobbs are very interesting. And I'll be interested to see, especially with Hobbs, how Green Bay moves with that one, if they keep or if they move on. But what are your thoughts on both?
I think they're going to keep both of them. Because, like, what, the Hobbs, I know people now are looking at like multi-year cap projections and stuff like that, which like honestly good.
Yep.
We probably should have more of that than just care about like the 2026 numbers, but
very much
2026 Nate Hobbs, he's only going to clear up like, it's like $800,000 of cap space or something like that. If you move on from him, here's the problem. Average NFL starting cornerbacks, not good, not good. Average NFL starting cornerbacks right now are costing about $18 million per year. If Keyshawn hit the open market, he'd be getting a lot closer to that than he would be like the $6 million or whatever that he's under contract for this year, right?
Yeah.
I don't think he'd get the 18, but he'd get closer to that than the six. Just because you release Hobbs doesn't mean anyone else is coming in, right? I mean, that's the big problem with the Packers cap situation right now, where you can release guys, but it's like taking your medicine for 27, 28 and all that stuff. And that's perfectly fine to do if you want to do that. And you say, hey, I want to clear the books. I want to make sure I don't want to pay Hobbs this year to still have half of his dead cap on the roster in 2027. Same thing with Aaron Banks, all that stuff. We're talking about a rebuild then at that point, folks.
I don't know.
We are talking about a rebuild.
I don't know if I agree with that fully.
The only way that it is not because I would project maybe one starter in the draft this year as a rookie, with the way that the Packers situation is. We're talking about getting rid of Banks. We're talking about getting rid of Hobbs and bringing in a corner, right? Ryan potentially leaving. We need a nose tackle. We need four guys. We don't have the cap space. So we could take from the future, but that means the window is 26 and 27, and then at 28, it's going to be really hard, if not the start of the rebuild by 28. So you kind of have to make a decision now whether you want the window to be 26, 27 or 27, 28.
And I want it 26, 27. I guess maybe you could make the argument the other way because of the injuries of like, hey, Micah's not going to be, you know, 100% until maybe the end of the year, even if that, and maybe, you know, who knows where he's at then. Same thing with, we can talk about Kraft coming off the ACL. We can talk about Tom coming off the major injury.
But if you want it 26, 27, if you're going to go the 26, 27 route, that involves Banks and Hobbs, I think.
So here, okay, let's walk through this. So the Nate Hobbs is a perfect example, right? You mentioned you save $800,000 and you save the actual cash that you would pay him this year, which is, I think, what was it? 9-10 million, something like that. Yeah. Which again, you're not going to find.
You would have no dead cap on the books in 27, 28. So you're getting basically, I think it's like between $14 and $15 million in cap space that you would get 27 and 28.
And Banks is probably the easier one here. So you save $19 million by moving on from him, but it's like $4 million this year that you save, and it's like $15 million next year, and so on and so forth. But you could theoretically, let's say Tevin Jenkins goes for around $10 million, you know, on the open market. Let's say Sean Ryan goes for $10 million on the open market. I could theoretically structure contracts in a way where both of them have, Sean Ryan and Tevin Jenkins have low cap hits this year, and I use the majority of the money that you're saving from 2027 to basically fund that in the future, where you're saving the money from Banks in any way, shape, or form next year. So you could still build it in a way where you're saving that $19 million and you can utilize that to actually pay Sean Ryan and Tevin Jenkins, for example, so that now I have, you know, Jordan Morgan, Tevin Jenkins, Sean Ryan, Anthony Belton, and Zach Tom left to right. Now I have two guards or a guard and a center instead of one guard, and I'm still questioning what I'm going to do at center.
Fair. I think we can give Ryan the contract either way, though. We have enough, and there's better ways to create cap space too. If it's just a purely creating cap space situation, like, convert Micah's bonuses and stuff. Convert Jordan Love's bonuses. Like
Josh Jacobs. Yeah, there's multiple.
It's that simple. I think where you get into the tricky spot is like, so you did all that. You barely created cap space, all this stuff. You push stuff into the future. And then you're like, what is the corner market? And it's
nightmare.
You're not getting a corner for that $800,000, right? In cap savings and stuff. In the draft, you could do it. But again, we have one pick in the top 80 there's probably going to be nine. I looked at the consensus board like last week, I think. There's supposed to be nine corners drafted before we go on the clock. Right? So we're banking on the 10th corner for sure, being a for sure good guy. Okay. Week one rookie starter.
What could go wrong?
Okay. All right. Good. Go for it.
Hey, Sam Fields, undrafted free agent corner. It was beautiful. Won a Super Bowl.
Yeah. I feel like so much stuff, just because it's like, this is such a weird offseason. It really, to me, what I think they're going to do, I think it's going to be a more like get your house in order for 27, 28 type of offseason than anything. Then like really like use everything in your ability and like burn future assets to like go hard, compete in that, like, especially when the team, like when these guys have multi-year extensions and their job security isn't really forcing it and stuff like that. I think it is just a better bet to like, this is an eat your vegetables time, folks. And I think one of the more interesting things is like, I really do think you can turn the Hobbs contract into a trade asset. Like, I really do believe it. If so, like, let me put it this way. Every team won't be playing this game. If Howie Roseman signed this contract and it went down how it did in 2025, what Howie Roseman would do, he would pay the $6.5 million signing bonus that Nate Hobbs has. He would then turn him into Hobbs would be under contract for like, I think it's under $8 million per year. It would be like 7.6 million APY average per year for 3 years, zero guaranteed money. And the first year would be like $2.9 million. So it'd basically be a $2.9 million 1 year contract, all of it non-guaranteed with two team options added to the end. Howie would just burn the money and say like, okay, here's an asset. We're not going to get that much from cap savings anyway. If it was really about saving money for 27, 28, we still save money 27, 28. Yep. We added about $5 million more to the 2026 cap hit. But now we can go to the market and say, hey, here's a slot cornerback who to you, team who will give me draft pick, is at 60% of market value. Because I do think Hobbs would still have a relatively strong market value unless it just completely tanked because
of that. At that rate, he for sure would. At that rate, he for sure would.
Yeah. So he would do that and then just like, oh, yeah, I got an extra fourth round pick or third round pick or something like that, right? So that's what Howie would do. Whether we do that, I don't know. We've never been involved in a cash for draft value swap, really. Like, yeah, you could look at like the Jared Goff, Matthew Stafford one was like really like a cash swap type of situation. That trade obviously doesn't involve us. There was the pass rusher last year that I kept talking about
Bryce with Huff. The Eagles,
Bryce Huff. That was 100%. Yes, that was 100% what Howie did with Bryce Huff. So I do think you can, like, there is a market for a Nate Hobbs. The problem is, the big problem with Green Bay isn't Nate Hobbs' contract isn't panning out. I think the market value is actually right. The problem is the Packers don't need another slot. That's the problem. It was a self-scouting issue where they thought, hey, we need another slot, and they didn't get another slot. They didn't need it because Evan Williams won the safety job and Javon Bullard had to get on the field in the nickel spot.
I did talk today on Monday's show for about like, could you find a way, you know, thinking back to like the, this is a little bit different, but like your sort of, what was it, Fred Vincent for Amon Green style trades or, you know, something like that. Could you find a way to take, you know, like a Javon Bullard and turn him into a corner offensive lineman or defensive tackle and then just put Banks in the slot in that situation? Could you turn a really good safety that some team would definitely have a ton of value in?
Not Banks.
Sorry, yes.
Yeah, Banks at the slot.
Yes.
It's a bad matchup.
It's the same thing. Hobbs in the slot. Could you just put Hobbs in the slot and then, you know, and let, you know, whatever outside corners you have, put Evan and X at safety. And then now you've turned Javon Bullard into a corner defensive tackle or offensive lineman. And you've traded from a position of strength into, you know, a position of weakness, meaning that you took a weakness and now hopefully made it more of a strength. I said the same thing, and I really don't like either of these, if I'm being honest, because I really like Javon Bullard and I really like Jaden Reed too.
if you decided that you're out of the Jaden Reed business in 2027, like you're not going to sign him to a huge extension, could you look at something there too? The names I brought up, yeah. And again, it doesn't matter. These aren't going to happen, but like Keanu Benton for the Steelers, could you swap one of those guys for Benton? They have Derek Harmon. They have Cam Hayward as their defensive tackles inside or on the interior. Could you, you know, say, hey, like, well, Ben's the same year as Jaden Reed was. They're making the same amount of money. And could you say, hey, we're you Kelvin Austin's a free agent for you guys. You need more playmakers. We'll give you Reed. We want Benton. Maybe there's a late round pick swap to some team in there. Could you do something like that? Could you do something like Javon Bullard for a Jerrion Jones in Jacksonville? Same draft class, second, third round pick. Jacksonville's got pretty good depth at corner. Travis Hunter's going to be coming back. If they resign Newsome or I forget the other starter off the top of my head, you know, if they resign those guys, they probably have the ability to trade away Jerrion Jones. Whereas safety outside of Antonio Johnson, you don't have the depth there. Could you trade, you know, Jerrion Jones for Javon Bullard? Just ideas that if I were Goody, and again, I'm saying flat out, I don't even necessarily love these. I would at least explore something like that just because you're going to have to find a way to be creative to round out this roster when you don't have a ton of salary cap space, don't have a ton of premium draft picks, and you need a huge remake at corner, a nose tackle, and some help on the offensive line.
And here's the other thing that we haven't talked about yet. And this kind of drives a lot of decisions at the league level in terms of when do we want to make trades and when do we want to just have contracts expire? And it is the comp picks. We very much need the comp picks, right? We're probably going to get five or four in 2027 for both Walkers, Willis, and Dobbs. We're probably going to get fifths across the board other than the Rashid Walker contract, and which will probably get us a fourth-round pick, right? So if this team – this is what I talk about when I say, like, get your house in order, like, eat your vegetables type of thing. If this team doesn't think that they want to extend guys in the final year of their contract, they should trade them now.
Yeah.
They really should. Because 27, you're going to have some more cash or cap flexibility, and you can go into the free agent market. Now, what you don't want is I don't want to have to sign a free agent, pay him market rate, and then also that cost me a fourth round pick.
Correct. Right?
In the comp formula. So like when you see a lot of these highly leveraged teams like Philadelphia, for example, like, yeah, they're in the trade market because the trades don't impact comp picks, right? Correct. It's the smart way to do it. It's how you get around the mechanism that tries to force parity on you. The NFL wants you to go 8-8, or I guess 8-8-1 now, right? They want you to go 8-8-1. So how do you get around it? Okay, well, there's this comp pick mechanism. We have free agencies, the salary cap, all this stuff. Well, what if we just went around it by going trades? Because they don't count that towards comp picks. So, yeah, I mean, again, this team needs to be very smart about who they want to pay market rate in 27 and 28. And they have to have a plan, and they have to commit to that plan, and they have to make those decisions now. They have to make those decisions now. Because now is when you're going to get the most bang for your buck out of these guys, right?
Yep.
So if you want to move off of LVN, if you want to move off of Jaden Reed, if you want to move off of White, you should probably do that in March. If you don't want to give them those four-year contracts with the big signing bonus in the front that we like to do, because everything that we do is in the form of a signing bonus instead of giving guys guaranteed years in year one and year two, you should probably do that now. You really should.
No, I'm right there with you. It makes all the sense in the world.
Because that way you can collect comp picks in 26. You can add draft assets in 26. In 27, you'll get the comp picks, and then you could spend the money in free agency if that's what you want to do and shore up whatever holes end up popping up in this game of whack-a-mole that you do from a roster construction standpoint.
I am more optimistic. I know we were talking a little bit with Ken Ingles in group chat too. Like I'm a little bit more optimistic, I think, than, and I guess to Ken's defense, he kind of said too, he wonders if they're going to add a couple, you know, bigger pieces into this market and maybe borrow some from the future. I think
there's really, it's like two guys. So like, to me, I think it's, if it's center I think it'd be Linderbaum, but I don't know if he's going to hit the market, right? They had some changeover there.
I don't think they're going to get to that level of free agent, to be honest.
We'll see. And then the other one, like, I know we called about Alante Taylor, the cornerback from the Saints. And maybe it could be a different cornerback. The reason I say Linderbaum at center is, like, everyone under Linderbaum is pretty much going to make the same as Sean Ryan for the most part. So it from a comp pick standpoint, I don't think it really even matters that much. I could see the team burning a comp pick and saying, to hell with the Rashid Walker pick. We need a cornerback right now. Let's go pay Alante Taylor, right? Or insert whatever cornerback we end up falling in love with. I could see the team do that. I do think that that would have to come with a Hobbs release, Hobbs trade, something. You have to get off of Hobbs at that point. And I think a lot of that has to do with not only immediate need, but the fact that the Packers don't have any cornerbacks on their roster who are under contract in 27. I think that's going to be a primary driver of the team needing a cornerback more than they need a 2026 starter.
Taylor's interesting too. He's had two of his four seasons where he's played far more in the slot, and he's had two of his four seasons where he's played far more. Well, one more on the outside, one far more on the outside. That was his rookie year, but he's played a ton of snaps in the slot. I kind of get a little bit of like Nate Hobbs, almost PTSD of like, he's played a lot of slot snaps, and you're kind of, I actually think that he's best in the slot personally, but I don't know. It's another interesting combo.
I mean, maybe it's a different scheme and stuff too.
True.
Right. Where like Halfley, you could have all the corners could be slot corners, right? I mean, it doesn't matter. We're playing cover two.
That was my hypothesis going in when people were freaking out about Hobbs. Like, I'm like, he'll be fine playing outside in Halfley system. It's all zone coverage, and you're asking him to do, it's going to be fine. And then it wasn't. And I'm like, I guess I was just like, I even said this the other day verbatim. I'm like, I think my theory is still right, but for some reason with Nate Hobbs, and maybe it was just the injuries, but with Nate Hobbs, it did not work that way.
Cause that's the other big X factor of Hobbs too, right? It's like, did we ever see him healthy? I don't know. Possibly not. He had the meniscus surgery. Well, Banks gets hurt every year. I think Banks is up to 9 separate uncorrelated injuries over the last two seasons between his last year in San Francisco, his first year in Green Bay.
Marshawn Lloyd a run for his money.
Hobbs, what, he had his meniscus surgery in August. After the Dallas game, they thought he had a cyst on his knee, and they didn't realize until like week 10 or something that he actually had an MCL sprain. And it wasn't a cyst. And then he finally got back on the field like the last couple weeks of the season, and then got injured again in week 17 against the Ravens. And that was the season ender. So, yeah, I don't know if we ever saw him fully healthy. I don't know. The Banks deal was bad. I don't know what to tell you guys. Like the Hobbs deal, I don't even hate the contract. I was just like, what the hell is their plan to get all of these guys on the field at the same time? And the answer is they never got on the field at the same time.
Yeah.
Poor self-scout. The Banks one, we way overpaid on a guy who had like one really good year in San Francisco and then has been like really hurt ever since then. I will say I did see Huber and Domofsky. Shout out to Huber. He actually talked to Galco about the Arizona passing game coordinator who came in and interviewed. I don't remember his name. I apologize for that. Who came in and interviewed for the quarterback coach job. Huber's doing a great job. He beat me to Galco, my former boss. If that's any indication. So both of them had their like cut keep.
Connor Sanger.
Yes. Both of them had like their cut keep restructure predictions. And they both said Hobbs. I think they both said Hobbs restructure or release. And then they both said Banks restructure. If you're Banks, under no circumstance do you restructure that contract. So the way that this will work out, right? If Green Bay asks Banks to restructure his deal and not get the $9.5 million roster bonus in early March, mid-March, he's going to say no, because he can get more than that $9.5 million on a signing bonus when he hits the market this year.
Yeah.
He's guys, that contract has got the Packers by the balls. There's no way around it. So maybe a restructure in 27, but this year, no chance.
The only thing I can think of is if they're thinking of taking the $7.7 million base salary and just extending that out with dead cap hits.
But they don't even have to talk to him about that.
Correct. But I'm just saying maybe that's what they mean by it, of like do a simple restructure of like you end up saving what, maybe $5 million in cap space this year by doing that at best. We're probably about $5 million. But that's the only real benefit there, I would think. But yeah, you don't have to talk to him to do that. So you could just do that whenever you wanted to.
Pulling up the Banks contract right now. So that would be 7.5 pro rate. Are we, now we have to get into hypotheticals. Are we prorating over 5 years or are we just doing it the 3 years under?
Doing the five, you'll do the five. So and you have to do a 2 million base basically. So you just, you save, you do a million banked out. So you're 3 million on this year's. Save what was it? Four. You probably save about $4 to $5 million about 4.7 million cap hit. That's probably how I would do it.
But now instead of saving like 10 million in 27 to get rid of Banks,
now you pay more.
Now you're getting like a $4 million.
That is always funny to me where it's like, oh my God, Russ Ball just created poof 4.7 million in open cap space. Like he's amazing. It's like, that's a simple restructure and you're going to pay for it later. And you've actually made it tougher to release him later, which is probably actually a very bad thing. We'll be right back.
Which, like, if we want to get into the business of doing that, we can. I mean, it's really expensive. There's teams that can really push it to the limit. Like the Browns, again, the Browns since 2020 have spent about $220 million more on players than the Packers have. Again, that would be like half of the Packers reserve rainy day fund, right? You can do it. Teams are spending 10% more cash than the cap consistently on a year-by-year basis. Obviously, it fluctuates from a team-by-team basis, but that's the NFL average. The Packers are pretty much keeping up with the NFL average, but there are teams that are really aggressive, folks. And some of them, it's working out. Like, you know, San Francisco, Buffalo, those are teams that are Philadelphia that are paying a ton of money. Some, it's not mattering at all. Like Cleveland and Miami, just paying more money doesn't necessarily give you better results. It is something that Green Bay could do. I don't think that that's really what they want to do. They're still kind of coming out of like the 1 year where they really pushed it with Aaron at the end.
Yeah,
like that's how long these things can kind of last. Like the Saints are like halfway through paying their debt for the Drew Brees era.
Yep. They still have
this stuff like they're paying. If you're borrowing for the future, it costs a whole lot more because no one wants to do the full rebuild. No one wants to go 0-17. They still want to stay competitive through the rebuild. So the rebuild can take a long time.
Yeah.
Rebuild can take a long time.
It's all going to be very interesting to see how Goody navigates this entire thing. And there's like a level of, you know, you need to be delicate during it, but you also need to be aggressive at the same time. It's going to be a very interesting situation to see how he navigates all of it.
I would like to trade Nate Hobbs for the fourth round pick. I think you can get Nate Hobbs for at least a fourth round pick, maybe a third. I think you can do it. And if you want to borrow the money for that and then clean your books for 27, 28 on that deal, I think you could do it. I don't think you could move away from Banks right now. And there's no way his agent will like even answer a phone call from Green Bay this offseason. If you cut me, and then I'll find a new contract, right?
Correct.
But if I'm going to be in Green Bay, it's under that deal because we got you by the balls.
Yep.
That's kind of where I stand on those two.
I would cut Banks, and I would try to trade Hobbs. And I would try to rebuild using that future money as best as I could from saving on both of those. But I think they'll keep both. And I hope that both pay it off and play much better in 2026 than they did in 2025. And I hope that the majority of the issues were due to injuries and Green Bay is due for a clean bill of health one of these years, which would be nice.
Well, we'll get early indications on this stuff because they have roster bonuses that are tied. I mean, those are really the two to watch. Those are the two roster bonuses that matter this year. I think Hobbs.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say Hobbs, I think, is like the third day of the new league year. I can't remember about Banks, but it's within the first five. So the first 5 days of free agency, we'll have to give him the 9.5. And then I think Hobbs, it's 6.5 million.
You don't think anybody would be stupid enough to give anything for Elton, would you?
No. No chance.
I don't think so either.
No.
Teams do stupid things.
No. I really don't think so. Well, he's not even.
It's like a $19 million. Isn't like a $19 million?
No, there's no way.
I don't think so.
If we do. Well,
the only thing I would say is that if did Green Bay screw up the guard market by paying Aaron Banks what they did? If all of a sudden.
Dude, they really might have.
If Aaron Banks.
Because all it does.
The world are making that much, then. Because the acquiring team will get Elton for, I guess it's 19.5, but the per game roster bonus is going to be a non. Yeah, 18.5. Yeah, I can't imagine a team's dumb enough.
No, I mean that, buddy. That's how the NFL works. One terrible contract gets signed, and everyone says that is the new bar. I do not go below that bar, right? I mean, that's what we've been talking about with the linebacker market and the Jermaine Sherwood deal, right? Which, by the way, I think Jermaine Sherwood, like, he led the NFL in allowed passing yards for a linebacker this past year.
That's good. So,
yeah, if he's getting 15, everyone's going to get 15. Anyone who's a starter and has any leverage is going to get 15.
And there's some stupid money out there to spend too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like the Pats couldn't even spend all their money last offseason. They were like, there's no one on the market. How can we spend $120 million?
And they still got Stephon Diggs and Milt Williams for crazy freaking deals too.
They paid Milt Williams like crazy.
That's a good move.
Non-Pro Bowlers, all that stuff. I will say, as far as free agency goes this year, I think the free agent I'm paying attention the most to is Alec Pierce. And the reason I'm paying attention to Alec Pierce is he is going to basically be the barometer for the Christian Watson extension. That's how it's going to work. If you look at that, like, second contract, and I get Christian Watson signed like the one-year extension, I don't care, right? For all intents and purposes, he's going to be a second contract guy in terms of what his agent is going to look for. If you look at like what second contract guys make at the receiver position, it's like everyone here makes $28 million a year. There's like three guys who make between like $28 and $5 million per year. And then everyone else is below or out of the league. Like, you get cycled out so fast at the receiver position. So there's not that many guys who are second contract guys who are making good money. And Alec Pierce is probably going to be one of those guys who's going to be able to sort of be like the canary in the coal mine for like what the market would be for a Christian Watson. I'm certain that the Alec Pierce deal will inform both sides on a potential Christian Watson extension. So I would keep an eye on that.
As you're saying that, I just realized Green Bay would be very smart to get a contract done with Christian Watson before Alec Pierce.
They're allowed to.
Right? I know.
Because you're able to give, even though he was on the one-year contract, because they had void years or something at the end of it, like they're able to negotiate that again before a full season passes.
They should do it right now. Because that it's going to get stupid if we see what Alec Pierce makes, is my guess.
If he's allowed to hit the open market, hell yeah, it is. Because people are going to like him a lot. The other thing, like, I haven't looked at the tight end contracts. Just pay Tucker, dude. Do it first day of the new league year. Announce it.
I did. Here's the two that make a ton of sense to me that I think you can basically split the difference.
Because the market top right now, right, is still the Kittle deal from a couple years ago.
Yes, I think it is. But so Trey McBride just got 4 years, 76. Okay. 4 years, 76.
Dude, I'd sign Tucker to that right now.
But McBride's not coming off a torn ACL. Obviously, Tucker is. 4 years, 76. And the other one that's near there, TJ Hockenson, we extended, got 4 years, 66. So you're clearly paying Kraft more than Hockenson got, 4 years, 66. Yeah. And you could, I think, make an argument of like, hey, we're not going above Trey McBride at 4 years, 76.
I'll give you a million more than Trey McBride. Let's sign it right.
Even if it is that, yeah, I'm totally with you. And that you have baseline there that makes it very easy. And to me, 4 years, 75, 4 years, 77, whatever it is, do it, get it done. Makes all the sense in the world.
No, pay him. Like the most obvious pay. Like there's so many guys whose contracts are going to come up with like Jaden Reed, LBN, Wyatt. I don't know what you do with Wyatt with him coming off an injury and stuff like that too. I'm sure I'm missing a couple. Kraft is the one. I do not care that he's coming off of his ACL tear. Pay him the money. If it doesn't work out, we lose, and it is what it is. But he's one of our best players. He fundamentally changed what our offense did in season. It cost us two games to adjust from what we lost from Tucker Kraft. Pay him the damn money right now before the market goes up. I don't know what – so what I was mentioning when I was talking about the market, I don't know what tight ends are coming up, right? Because that's the big thing. We're like
– yeah.
A lot of people paid a lot of money on slot defenders last offseason. That's why the slot defender market blew up, because they knew Kyle Hamilton was coming, right? So when Kyle Hamilton is coming, obviously these guys are not going to get the Kyle Hamilton $25 million per year to play in the slot, which is what he got. But they were like, look, people are going to want to meet in the middle, and that middle is a whole lot higher than what we can get slot defenders for right now. So if we have the ability to get a slot defender, let's pay him this second, which, again, another thing with Nate Hobbs, where it's like, if we eat the roster bonus – trade him to another team. He's on a $2.8 million one-year contract with two team options. Over the course of 3 years, the APY is like $7.6 million or something like that. The market for an average slot defender right now is like $13 million. And the high end is $25 million. So that average is going to only creep up in the coming seasons. There's true value in the Hobbs deal. Now, do we need a slot defender? No, we don't need a slot defender. That is our biggest problem. It's not the actual Hobbs contract. It's that we spent this money on a slot defender only for him to be the backup to a guy we took in the second round the year before.
Don't worry. They'll find a way to get rid of Hobbs, and Bullard will tear his ACL in the first week of the season, and they'll be screwed at slot. That's exactly what happened.
Catano Adapo season, baby.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And I like Catano Adapo. Really quick, I just wanted to shout out an article that you did, and I promised somebody in our live chat that I would ask you about this as well. You did, I think it was you who did a quick breakdown of like what positions stack up in the NFL draft. Like what are the positions that look best in depth of this draft? What have you seen so far?
Yeah. So the easiest way that I can explain it to people, I went draft by draft trying to figure out what type of caliber player is usually available for the 53rd or first 52nd overall pick. Basically, it's squad wipe top 40. Like consensus board top 40, those guys are unavailable unless they have some sort of off-field or medical red flags. As much as Packers fans love to complain about injuries and stuff, those are homegrown, brother. Like the Packers usually do not go after guys with medical concerns or off-field stuff. Off-field stuff has come up really only with like Wyatt, right? And then the medical stuff came up with Beagle way back in the day. And then he ended up breaking his foot like first week of OTAs or rookie minicamp. I can't remember which one. And then Eddie Lacy had the fused foot, right? And he fell a full round in the draft before they ended up taking him. So for the most part, they're going to stay away from injury guys, medical red flag guys. So top 40, if you see those guys projected top 40 on like consensus board, assume they're not going to be available for the Packers at 52. So what I did was I looked at everyone after the top 40 to about 200. Because after 200, buddy, no one knows who is going to get drafted in the last two rounds of the draft. Like a long snapper might go before guys who are
on draft time.
So I correlated their spots on the consensus draft board with the Jimmy Johnson trade value chart. Okay. And then what I did was I compared on a positional level this year compared to the last five draft classes.
Okay? I love this.
So we can get a feel of where is this draft stronger in the area of the draft that the Packers are actually going to be participating in on a position by position level. The answer is quarterback by far strongest. It's like 198% of the value of the normal draft relative to the last five draft classes.
Interesting.
Here's the bad news. Below average, interior defensive line by far last. That's not great. A lot of that has to do more with like day three value. There's a lot, or day two value. There's a lot of defensive tackles in this class. There's not like a lot of like second rounders, early third round guys.
Gotcha.
Cornerback is actually slightly above average. Offensive line is a little below average. I think linebacker is a little below average for where the Packers are going to be picking. Offensive line, way less worried about it. Just like there's so much volume. There's always value to be had on the offensive line. I do think – so from like a what matters standpoint, I think it's good that we're drafting in a class where cornerback is relatively strong, because I think we're going to need – again, we're going to just need contracts for 2027 at minimum. Linebacker, who knows? Because, again, I don't know if we're in a 3-4 or 4-3. I haven't even gotten opinions on these guys yet. Defensive tackle, I think defensive tackle is a position, because you have so many guys under contract still. I think it's a swing big or go home position. I think it's like second round pick, third round pick. Either there's a starting nose tackle there or not.
Or there's not. Yep.
Yeah. And like I'm hitting on a starting nose tackle or I'm not swinging at all. I think that's what makes the most sense. Offensive line, again, there's just so much volume. It's hard for me to believe that there's not value out there somewhere. It's not a position like quarterback where it's like, oh, it's good. We're talking about nine guys. Like offensive line, it's below average. We're still talking about like 30 dudes who are going to get drafted after the top 40. So like there's going to be players who you're going to be able to find some value on.
No, it's really informative. Hopefully Green Bay can find some diamonds in the rough at those other positions and still find value at offensive line. Like we've said all episode long, they're going to have to be very, very meticulous, very creative, and they're going to have to hit on draft value, free agency, et cetera, to kind of round up this roster and get it to be. And I'll just say from like what I was going to say before too, is I still think this team's going to put a very, very, very good roster on the field, like one way or the other, even if it does end up being Keyshawn and a new corner at corner and you know, Hobbs, or even if it's like Keyshawn and Hobbs and Bullard in the slot or something crazy, even if it does end up being, you know, basically the same offensive line and maybe you bring back Sean Ryan at center, like no matter what, this is going to be a really talented team. And I think the biggest thing for this team is that guys are already on the roster, are taking a step in the right direction. And hopefully with some new coaches and some things like that, that'll go the way that we need it to.
Yeah. And again, people don't want to hear it, but like, we're super young. And we're kind of, we are perpetually going to be super young, but we're super young.
Until they sign Calais Campbell. Until they sign 40-year-old Calais Campbell. Then that's how we even this thing out.
If you look at like curves of like, if you can look at like the age by age breakdown of like AV, right? Approximate value. That's like Pro Football Reference's stat. Like we should be getting better on a year by year basis, just off of the age of our roster alone. Do you want some thoughts on this corner class? I've seen four of them.
Sure. Go for it.
Ibinosun?
Actually, you know what? Let's hold this for next week. We're gonna need topics next week as well. Let's tease that for next week. I actually did have it on my list because I know you had Takario Davis and some other ones. I had on my list today. So we'll tease that for next week. We'll go over some corners next week. It'll allow me I'll dive into some of those as well, so I can have a little bit more of a educated conversation on it. We'll break it down next week.
All right, sounds good to me. All right, I think. I hate watching corners. You have to watch so much film to get a good feel of what cornerbacks are like. And I think I'm successfully going to be done watching cornerbacks by the end of the first week of February.
There you go.
I'm very happy to get it out of the way. The problem is I don't know our defense. What is that?
Can you not just watch targets, the snaps that the corners are targeted on?
You could, but that's a bad way to evaluate corners.
It depends on a variety of different factors. You're right. Yeah, I shouldn't say in totality. You can't do it that way in totality, but that's my first glance that I want is in targets. Yeah,
for sure.
All right, my friend, you're the absolute best. Anything else you wanted to go over before we get you out of here?
No, I'm good. All right.
Well, we'll talk some corners next week. I can't wait for that. Find him on social media at JUMOSQ, of course, acmepackingcompany.com. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. That's going to do it for us today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.